Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, I'm great, Carlos. Spring is popping up here in Toledo. We had a beautiful week, and every golf course is getting some action. Hey, on the golf tours, South Africa's Charles Schwartzel got his first PGA Tour win since the 2011 Masters. Scott Henn picked up his second European Tour title in Thailand, and it's only 22 days to the Masters. Let's go, Carlos.
22 days? Oh, my God. It's just
22
right around the
days.
Corner. Why isn't it less than that? That's all I have to say. It's not this weekend. That's the only bad thing. But, hey, there was plenty of action in the major tours. And, no, Adam Scott didn't win on the PGA Tour. Bad news, but the good news is he didn't play. That's why. So there were some other players. They are playing in the Valspar Championship in Tampa. And, Fred, I believe you have the action from there. What happened there?
I do. You know what? With extremely tight fairways at Innisbrook, the bombers take the week off and the shot makers take center stage on the PGA Tour. After posting a 2-over par 38 on the front nine on Sunday, Bill Haas still held a one-shot lead heading to the back nine. But the snake pit claimed another victim as he made a bogey at number 16, while former Masters champion Charles Schwartzel made a birdie run and waited in the clubhouse at 7-under par for Haas to finish. Haas couldn't birdie either 17 or 18, which left him tied with Schwartzel for the lead and forced a playoff. Schwartzel had begun the day five shots behind the leader, and Haas in eighth place. If you remember, Schwartzel won the 2011 Masters by birding the final four holes at Augusta National, and he went on another birdie barrage to catch Haas with 33 birdies over his last six holes. He didn't let up in the playoff either. Haas could only manage a bogey at number 18, the first hole of the playoff, and Schwartzel's par was good for his second win on the PGA Tour. The story of the week, however, was the play of 22-year-old University of Georgia golf team member Lee McCoy. McCoy grew up at Innisbrook and posted rounds of 74, 71, 66, which was the low round of the day on Saturday, 69, to not only make the cut, but was in contention on Sunday in a professional event as an amateur. He earned a dream pairing with world number one, Jordan Spieth, on Sunday for the final round, and his 69 soundly beat the world's number one, who had a 73. While McCoy moved up five spots to finish fourth, Spieth went the other way, dropped eight spots to T18. McCoy will turn professional later this year. It appears Spieth's extra play last fall is catching up with him. He just did not take enough time away from golf, and the constant grind of travel and maintaining the number one spot is beginning to show. We're going to talk some more about that a little later in the show. From young guys to old guys, the Valspar offered something for everyone. Part-time golfer Steve Stricker finished T7 and was among the leaders on Friday night after a second round 66. Another veteran, Charles Howell III, even had a good week with a T5 finish. The greens were very, very slow. They appeared shaggy on television, and the players had a difficult time gauging the speeds all week. Carlos, did you notice the quiet one? Louis Oosthuizen had another high finish, T7. He's played well at Augusta before. We can probably add his name to the list of possible contenders for the green jacket.
Oh, he does, and there's so many good players playing great going to the Masters. So that's what I keep saying. I mean, I don't know who's going to come out on top. Whoever's going to come out on top is going to have to play excellent. And I think there's going to be on Sunday like three, four, five, maybe six players contending. So can't wait for it. But hey, Had a great week, definitely, for Charles. I love his play. I love how he plays. He's a great guy, great player, and great to see him back winning again. Hey, there was action also on the European Tour where, like you mentioned, Australia's Scott Hand, he held off a brilliant challenge from Thailand's Piyasu Warunuporn to win the True Thailand Classic and make amends for last year's near miss. Hand carded a closing 68 at the Black Mountain Golf Club to finish 18 under par, one shot ahead of world number 798 Swan Guranoporn, okay, who had surged through the field with a course record 63. Sugaranoporn began the day 6 shots off the lead, but wiped out that deficit with 6 birdies and an eagle in the first 14 holes before another birdie on the 18th, setting an imposing clubhouse target. But then Hens, who had a 2-shot overnight lead that had been wiped out quickly by Belgium's Thomas Peters, he birdied the first and held out from the bunker to take an eagle in the second and take control. But Hens then hit birdies on the second and fourth. He was still facing a one shot behind Swan Guranoporn with 6 holes to play, but he made up the deficit with 2 birdies on those holes to secure his second European Tour international victory. So for Swan Guranoporn, he finished second, Peters third, and American Peter Uihlein continues to do very good finishes. This is his third consecutive top 10 finishes, finishing solo fourth. He's been knocking on the door lately. Seems like a matter of time till he gets his win. And also another tournament that was playing in the minor tour, it was the Sunshine Tour. And listen to this name, Hayden Porteous. He's been playing well, very well, on the European Tour, and it's just a matter of time before we start seeing him here on this side of the pond. Hayden Porteous, a South African, he saw a 2-footer for par eventually go in at the 18th hole at Millvale Private Retreat on Saturday, and he scrapped home the one-shot victory in the finale of what is the Chase to the Investec Cup, which is the equivalent to the FedEx Cup there in South Africa. But the big winner there was Dean Burmester, who pocketed a cool 4 million South African rands, or just over $257,000, for topping the points list in the Investec Cup bonus pool. Porteous' win came at the expense of Brandon Stone, who hit his approach to 18th into a lateral hazard and dropped a shot after the pair had walked to the 18th tee all square thanks to a third-shot putt missed by Porteous in a nervy final round. Burmester finished in third place in the finale, but his lead was never going to be challenged during the week after a chase, which included 4 victories and 7 more top 10 finishes, 8 with his performance at Millvale, Fred.
Carlos, I'm just happy that you had the European Tour stuff tonight, because I don't know, Swan Guranoporn? Is that how you say it? Swan Guranoporn, yeah. Well, okay. I'm glad you had to say it, not me. Hey, the LPGA Tour returns to the continental U.S. this week with the JTBC Founders Cup in Phoenix, Arizona. 95 of the top 100 women golfers will be in the field, so that should be a good one. The PGA Tour rolls into Bay Hill for the Arnold Palmer Invitational this week. 86-year-old Arnie has not been faring too well and will take a limited role this week in Orlando. It was announced today that Arnie will not hit the ceremonial first shot at Augusta next month. He has said that was a goal to make it to the Masters, but he's just not healthy enough to attempt a shot, Carlos.
That's unfortunate news that we're not going to see him take that opening tee shot there at the Masters. But, hey, get well, Arnie. We'll see you next year. Well, that wraps up our weekend back scene. We're going to take our first short break. When we come back, we're going to have our Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. So don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, you have the tee shot, and you're going to talk about Adam Scott and something going on in his bag and what's going on there.
Yeah, Adam Scott's going to have Stevie Williams back on the bag for the Masters, even though he's won twice this year with David Clark on his bag. Scott's had a wonderful Florida swing with wins at the Honda and Doral with Clark. But Stevie had been signed on to tote the sticks for the Masters, and that's how it's going to be. Scott, who had not won on the PGA Tour since the Colonial in 2014, talked Williams out of retirement last year to work for him in the majors and a few select events. Williams, of course, has been a top caddy for many years on the PGA Tour, beginning with Greg Norman, then for several years with Tiger Woods. He was with Scott when he won the 2011 WGC Bridgestone and the 2013 Masters, two of Scott's biggest titles. Williams, never shy around a microphone, has gotten himself into trouble over the years with his comments about other players, and his recent autobiography was not kind to Tiger. But they're split after Woods' personal problems and his injuries. Scott is making a sound business decision, although, to bring Stevie back for the Masters. It appears that he and Clark have a solid chemistry, and it may be advisable to maintain that relationship. Williams' vast knowledge of Augusta and his motivational skills, plus his ability to get Adam Scott to play at a level a little bit higher than what he thinks he can, probably is a wise choice, Carlos. Stevie just has great history there. He knows the place inside and out. And even if Scott didn't use him, you know, Stevie's going to be in high demand by somebody. But, you know, Williams at the place where he's not going to come back for just anybody. And Adam Scott's playing as well as anybody in the world right now. So that should make a pretty good combination for Augusta National, Carlos.
He's not going to win now. He broke the streak now. David Clark, he was winning with him. I'm discarding him.
Writing him right off.
Writing him right off, yes, right off. Hey, let me tell you something. The PGA Tour needs to update its drug policy. Okay? Golf is scheduled
they have,
to return to...
They have a drug policy?
Yeah, apparently they do. So, you know, golf is scheduled to return to the Olympics this year's Rio Games, but according to the World Anti-Doping Agency, the WADA, the drug enforcement policies followed by the sport's biggest tour are still a problem. In an interview with Golf.com, David Howman, WADA's Director General, called on the PGA Tour to take the necessary steps to strengthen its anti-doping program manual. Apparently it exists. In order to bring it into compliance with WADA's code. That's the message from the WADA, according to ESPN. Since golfers playing on the PGA Tour in America and sanctioned for testing positive for meldonium, which is the drug that Maria Sharapova, as you will know, revealed last week that she was found using. So the WADA banned meldonium on January 1st, but the PGA Tour hasn't updated its policy 2 months later, meaning a player using the drug, which Sharapova said she had taken to deal with an irregular heartbeat, but also has endurance benefits, at the next month's Masters will not be sanctioned. The European Tour has already amended its drug policy, and meldonium is now on the banned substance list. This is according to ESPN. But, of course, we're talking about who? The PGA Tour. And it's the PGA Tour and the spokesman, Ty Botto, who is the PGA Tour Vice President for Communications. They already defended the efficacy of the program in place and said that some WADA regulations were unnecessary for golfers and too onerous for the tour to enforce. The European Tour did it. They don't. So I don't understand it. But anyway, Volto added that the tour is not alone because none of the major sports leagues in the United States, the MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL are WADA signatories. And Andy Levinson, the PGA Tour's Executive Director of Policy Administration, said no changes will be made to the tour's policy until the fall. He said, and I quote, "We revise our prohibited substance list on a seasonal basis in early fall, and at that time, meldonium was not prohibited by WADA. When our next revision takes place at the end of the 2015-16 season, it will be put on the list." End of quote. Fred, this is simple. Golfers have been warned, they are the ones that are going to be taking part in the Rio Olympics this summer will be disqualified immediately should they be found taking meldonium, as the Olympics used the WADA's policy.
Yeah, you know, the tour has such a good history with controlled substances. You know, over the they're still smarting over the Vijay Singh thing. That thing still, you know, I guess they did settle it or whatever. But that Elkhorn dust or whatever that stuff was. Hey, Fincham and Pelle were kind of going back and forth in the news last week a little bit. You know, why doesn't the PGA travel to more venues outside the U.S. for tournaments is an annual question for PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham. As was the case last week at the WGC Cadillac, three of the four World Golf Championships events, which were originally to be held at courses around the world, are annually held inside the continental United States. Fincham said last week a desire to bring together the leading tours under a lone umbrella, not just the WGCs, but the entire sport run by a consolidated body. He said, what's in the paramount best interest of men's and women's professional golf is coming under one unified organization with a genuine global brand and being able to compete on a global level in the global markets, much like soccer, he said. I didn't think soccer was organized at all. I thought there was those guys there and these guys here, and it seems like every time you turn around, it's like world boxing. Who's really in charge here? There aren't that many sports that are as in-depth activity on virtually every continent in the world as golf. And that's the reason why the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, wanted golf as part of the Olympics. So I think we should be taking advantage of that. Sooner or later, I think everybody is going to get on that road. And when they do, I think it's going to be a very positive thing for professional golf. The timing may be coincidental, but it's hard to ignore the fact that this emphatic message has been restated early in the new European Tour regime led by Canadian Chief Executive Keith Pelle. Meanwhile, Pelle is currently trying to strengthen the European Tour by merging with the Asian Tour, and that kind of fell through. The Asian market is filled with possibilities and a lot of revenue streams. When questioned, Pelle responded, "We are golf's global tour. We play in 26 countries on five continents of the world, including the United States. We have quite a bit of diversity right now, and what we are currently trying to do is build our organization for our tour members." Ask if a combined tour would automatically make commercial sense, as Fincham intimated, Pelle added, "I think golf is a little bit different to other sports based on how many tours there are. We are obviously working with quite a few. We have sanctioned events with a number of organizations. Whether a consolidated tour is advantageous is something that would require significant exploration from all the tours." So, you know, the bottom line on this thing is, you know, they talk about it every year. We've got these World Golf Championships that are supposed to take players to other parts of the world, expose big-time events, in other parts and other countries, and it's just never happened. The bottom line is that the sponsors with the money to provide $6, $8, $9, $10 million purses with $1.0 and $1.5 million checks to the winners are here in the U.S. Until international sponsors can be found that will step up and offer several million to entice the top names to travel outside the comfortable confines of America, the big names and the big events will stay right here. On another note, though, Carlos, I do think that we are much closer to the day when big money events will be played in China, Japan, and Korea. There are some very large corporations that have the money to hold an event in Asia or the Far East. It's only a matter of time. You know, they go over there for the HSBC Champions to Shanghai, and they go to Malaysia. But there's a lot more potential for big-time money stuff over there in Asia. And I see that coming very, very rapidly, Carlos.
You got my point. I was just going to say that.
Is that right?
Yeah, totally. Totally agree with you. I mean, couldn't agree with you more, because there's a lot of money going around in those companies, a lot of technology, a lot of finance and insurance, and hey, they can move money and they can get those sponsors, and who knows, you know, the PGA Tour better get their act straight, because the European Tour is moving the right pieces with Kip Perry, and who knows, we might start losing some players soon, who knows. But anyway,
Carlos, I keep telling every young person I meet that you might as well learn Chinese, because it's going to be,
yep,
you know, the way English goes around the world now, you're going to have to know Chinese one of these days. So that's what I tell
Mandarin,
you.
Mandarin.
Future players are going to have to play there. What's that?
Yep. Mandarin is the dialect they have to learn. It's one that, yep. So we'll see. But anyway, maybe we'll have to start doing that too. Hey, let me tell you something. The PGA of America announced last week that it has extended the contract of CEO Pete Bevacqua through December 2021. His current contract was set to run through November 2018, but an extension was approved at a recent board meeting in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Derek Sprague, who is the president of PGA America, said in a statement, and I quote, "Pete is an exceptional leader who has made a major impact as a CEO. He created a bold vision for the PGA with the long-term strategic plan we are now implementing," end of quote. Bevacqua is 44 years old. He came to the organization in 2012 after stints with both the USGA and CAA Sports. His 11 years at the USGA included a four-year run as the organization's first chief business officer, as well as time as the managing director of the U.S. Open. His tenure with the PGA of America, CEO since November 2012, has included the signing of a 15-year television rights with NBC Sports, as well as the creation of the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, which will be played for the second time this year. Bevacqua said his long-term plan with the PGA of America will include to be growing the game, and he said in a statement, and I quote, "It is a great honor to continue in this role with the PGA of America. I'm grateful to the members of the board for their ongoing support and for the confidence they've placed in me. I cherish the opportunity to represent the 28,000 men and women PGA professionals and remain determined to serve them and help them grow our great game," end of quote. Fred, congratulations to Pete. I mean, he has done a wonderful job. Nobody can say it. Can deny that, but I would only say that he has only one blemish in his record, and that's the firing of Ted Bishop. But hey, nobody's perfect. But
yeah, kind of waiting, kind of curious. You know, Ted's coming out with a new book. I've been in contact with him. We're gonna get a copy. We're gonna be able to do a review. We're gonna have him on the show and talk about that here down the road when it gets a little bit closer to its release. So can't wait to talk about that a little bit more. I'm sure Pete will be involved in that somewhere along the line. Carlos, we got big news here in Toledo, and I think it's big for the LPGA also. You know, we reported the new strategic alliance between the PGA and the LPGA Tours last week. It appears it may already be paying some dividends for the LPGA Tour. For the first time ever in the 31-year history of the Marathon Classic, the final round will be broadcast on network television. A lot of credit must go to Marathon for shelling out the big bucks to pay for the television fees, but still, it's a big jump for a major network like CBS to carry a women's event that is not a major on Sunday afternoon. In the agreement between the tours, they mentioned that one of the areas that they could work together was with the PGA Tour helping negotiate a new television agreement for the LPGA Tour. The last contract for the LPGA allowed the Golf Channel to broadcast all of its events. It wasn't that long ago that the Marathon Classic, then the Jamie Farr, was not aired on any TV outlet. The Golf Channel contract gave golf fans a chance to see the Toledo event in over 160 countries around the world. This 2016 Marathon Classic may be a test case to gauge the popularity of an LPGA Tour event for that network. With contract negotiations looming, could CBS Sports and CBS be a bidder for the LPGA Tour events? NBC, who owns Golf Channel, has a limited PGA Tour schedule since it lost its USGA contract last year to Fox, and they've been looking to add more coverage. The Open Championship, which will begin at Royal Troon this year, will be aired by NBC and is scheduled against the LPGA Tour's Marathon Classic. Marathon, it's kind of funny. Marathon actually requested this date from the tour when they began their sponsorship of the event 4 years ago. With the major championship on TV in the mornings from the UK, the LPGA Tour can have golf fans to themselves for the Marathon Classic in the afternoons. The LPGA Tour, with its bright young stars, may just be the right place at the right time to get the two giant networks to bid against each other for a mega deal for women's golf. All eyes will be on Toledo for the 2016 Marathon Classic in July. It will not only be the final full field event for the remainder of the 2016 season, but it'll be a huge test for women's golf on network television, Carlos. And that wraps up the Par 5 news for Tuesday, March the 15th, 2016. Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. Carlos, I don't know if you saw it. I had posted on Facebook a jacket that United Golf Network is advertising right now for $34.99. It's a great-looking windbreaker jacket, fleece-lined, really, really nice. Just one of the great deals you can get there. They have a top line of products, including Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount. So log on to UnitedGolfNetwork.com, check out their products, discounts, and the opportunity to own your own pro shop, Carlos.
And we're going to take now a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our VIG segment, a very important guest of the week, who is Tyler Wolford. Nobody go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the VIG Very Important Guest of the Week. His name is Tyler Wolford. He's a PGA Junior Team Golf Player Development Manager for the South Florida section of the PGA. He has seen the program grow from just a few junior golfers enrolled in 2013 to over 60 teams serving 700 kids. At its core, PGA Junior League Golf is a group of local golf teams who play a series of games against each other, utilizing a nurturing and social scramble format. The program is available to boys and girls 13 and under of all abilities. PGA and LPGA professionals exclusively serve as captains and are responsible for creating a welcoming environment for all that encourages skill and character development. Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview.
Yeah, I happened to meet Tyler, and this PGA Junior Team Golf has been popping up on my radar a little bit more. You remember when we had Susie Whaley on a year ago, just a little bit over a year ago, you know, that was one of her pet projects, was the junior golf program that the PGA is promoting. And I didn't know much about it at the time, and it's been popping up a little bit more here and there. They have a local program here where I live, and they're expanding that this year to include more clubs. And it looks like a really great program to me, and I happened to talk to Tyler, and I asked him if he would tape a segment for us and explain a little bit more about what it is and how it works. And so that's kind of what this little interview does, Carlos.
Let's play it.
We're really happy to be talking with Tyler Wolford, who is the Team Golf Player Development Manager with the South Florida section of the PGA. Welcome, Tyler, to Back Nine Report.
Thanks, Fred. I appreciate you having me on.
Now, you're involved with Team Golf in South Florida. South Florida is a pretty big area. Tell us a little bit about Team Golf. What's the concept there? How did it come about? What are you doing with that?
team golf and PGA Junior League within the PGA of America is our kind of national program that's implemented within the 41 sections that are across the country, again, within the PGA of America. But, you know, it's a way that that we were looking at trying to get kids involved with the game of golf, but to do it in a team environment, to do it in a way where it's an atmosphere where it's more fun and sociable for kids. The concept is similar to what you see in other youth sports like soccer or Little League Baseball, where the kids are part of a team and they have a weekly team practice. But the big bonus or the big benefit that we like to promote is that the coaches for these teams are PGA and LPGA professionals. So, you know, for those even like myself playing youth sports growing up, I played soccer and Little League Baseball, and although the coaches were great, they were just you know, regular mom or dad or family friends from one of the teammates on the team. It wasn't someone that was an expert at what they do. So for parents that are out there that are looking for ways to get their kids involved with youth sports, you know, golf offers an opportunity to do it in a team atmosphere and to do it where they're going to get coached by a PGA or LPGA professional.
I understand that the children are broken down by age group, so they're competing against children of their own age. Is that correct?
The ages are 7 to 13, so the groups that are set up within the individual teams, they range in that category. So you may have some teams that are you know, just 7, 8, 9 years old, and you may have other teams that are all 10, 11, and 12 year olds. But when they compete in the tournaments, it's broken down by ages in terms of their the structure of the format and things like that.
And you even break down the golf course. You don't put them out there from the tips and make them play and hit 10 balls before they can get to the green.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it kind of hit back on our mission of it being fun. Most everything's set up really for the true beginner to intermediate type player. I'd say, you know, the maximum that you might see is for a 9-hole tournament, and that's what all of this is when we do these games or tournaments. Is everything's just 9 holes, so they may play anywhere from 1,500 yards upwards of 2,400 total yards, where you may see a par 3 set up around 80, 90, 100 yards, a par 4 around 180 yards, and maybe a par 5 around 250. So we certainly don't want to burden these kids right off the start. We want to make it fun and for them to enjoy it, and but also to do it where they're playing with their teammates and kids their same age.
How are these events scored? You have a team, you have your practice, you have your pro in charge, and you go play a match, you go to another golf course and play another team. How are these scored? Is it individual stroke play? Is it match play, stableford? How do you do this?
Yeah, it's all really within the confines of usually match play from one team to the next. So one facility will come and play against another facility, and everything is a two-person scramble format. So one two-person team will play with another two-person team. They'll play in a 9-hole match. Now, some teams may have extra players involved with that, and so they'll do some alternates. So at the end of the day, what you're looking for is anywhere from 6, maybe upwards of 10 players that are coming from a team or a facility, and they're broken up into individual two-person teams. We usually let the PGA or LPGA professional, the coach, kind of figure out how they're going to set up their two-person teams. But from there, that two-person team will play against another two-person team. And really what a lot of the golf courses are doing is they're factoring off maybe 3 or 4 tee times and setting up the tournaments that way. So if they've got, let's just say, 10 kids on a team, they'll have 5 two-person teams, and they may play against another team that has 5 two-person teams. So they'll block off maybe 4 or 5 tee times and go from there. So all the groups are groups of 4, but it's 1 two-person team playing against another two-person team in a 9-hole scramble format.
When did you start this program in South Florida, and what kind of growth have you seen in it thus far?
Yeah, we started it here in 2013, and to give you an idea, when we started it, we had basically 3 different leagues. We kind of separate our leagues by counties. Our borders of our territory within the South Florida PGA are a little bit smaller than what you may see at some of the other sections across the country. So we did ours by county. So We had three different counties that did it in 2013, and we had 18 teams, and we had about 190 kids that did it. 2 years later, advancing to last year in 2015, we had 10 different leagues, basically in about eight different counties, and we had 60 teams and close to about 700 kids. So it's grown tremendously. I mean, it's a big testament really to our PGA and LPGA professionals that are out there that really have kind of taken ownership of the program and really run with it. But it's also something where we've seen a lot of value with from the parents and from the players that the kids really enjoy it. They have a lot of fun with it, and that's really kind of our main goal, is to make sure that they have fun, that they enjoy the game, and hopefully want to continue doing it for a long time.
Well, we've had Susie Whaley on the show in the past, and I know this is something that's near and dear to her heart, is the team golf concept for junior golfers. And you've seen great results from it. It is starting to get known. A really important question, though, you know, when I'm playing Little League Baseball or you see the Major League Football guys out there, they all got a uniform. So, I mean, that's a pretty big deal, getting a uniform for these kids. And you see even the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup and the Solheim Cup, they all got their uniform. So these kids got their own uniform here?
Oh, absolutely. And that's probably the number one factors that these kids are looking forward to, especially when they get to their first practice. When the kids all register for PGA Junior League Team Golf, they get a membership kit, and part of that membership kit is their team jersey. So we'll coordinate with the host facilities or the PGA professionals that are out there that coach the teams and figure out what colors they may want to do, because they'll have a number of different options with the team colors. But they'll get this team jersey, and it's color coordinated. So if depending on how many kids are on the team, all the kids will get the same color. You know, just like you would see in other youth sports, they'll get a jersey number on the back. So I tell you what, if you've been out to a first practice before and you see some of these smiling faces that go away from the kids, they love it, getting that team jersey. I know that's a big bonus for them.
So the program is Team Golf. It's promoted by the PGA of America. If you want some more information or to get one started in your area or at your club, visit pgaofamerica.com. You can also visit Tyler's site, which is www.sfpgajuniorgolf.com for South Florida, pgajuniorgolf.com. He will be happy to get you the information you need or contact the person you need to get something going in your area. Tyler, any other final parting words?
No, Fred, I would just mention they've actually have a separate main website for anybody across the country that can look at it. If you go to www.pgajlg.com. JLG stands for Junior League Golf. So pgajlg.com, and they can actually see different facilities and programs across the country to kind of see if there's a golf course nearby to where they're at and be able to register from there.
Thank you very much, Tyler. It's been great having you on the show, and we wish you the best of luck with your program going forward.
No, thank you, Fred. I appreciate the time.
There you have it. That was the interview with Tyler Wolford, the PGA Junior Team Golf Player Development Manager for the South Florida section of the PGA. And the website that he mentioned is a very informative website. It has an instructional video, and it lets you know everything that you need to know if you want to get involved in that league, Junior League Golf.
Yeah, you know, Carlos, this is just kind of like one more piece of the puzzle for the whole grow the game thing, introducing golf to kids at a young age and get them out there playing in a fun environment, get them out there with other kids. They're playing like a two-man scramble. They're playing against a couple other young kids. It's just got to be a great deal. And like I say, the PGA of America is really behind this thing. They're really driving it. And as you heard Tyler say, they've had tremendous growth in this in their section over the last 3 years down there. So they're pretty high on it, and I know they're growing here in my area also, as well as other areas around the country, Carlos.
And they have great ambassadors, as you all know, Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler and Mitchell Wee and Lexi Thompson. So any time those will arrive at any match, hey, the kids get very excited. So great role model for them to follow. And this is going to be great. Anything that is for growing the game, we've always been all for it. Hey, we're going to take one more short break, and when we come back, we have the practice range where we are going to be discussing if there is anything wrong going on with Georgian Speed WOA.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and we should take a shot at it. This week, we're going to be talking about Jordan Spieth and if there's something wrong with him. I mean, he's not playing the same that he's been playing, but all of this is because of that high bar that he set last year. I mean, he had one of the best seasons ever in golf. He set records everywhere, left and right. He won two majors. He was very in contention for the other two. He won five times. He became the world number one. And he got us accustomed. I mean, he spoiled us. He was every week contending. But what's going on? Well, lately he hasn't been the same. In the past four tournaments, at the AT&T Pebble Pro Beach, he finished the 21st. Then he missed a cut at the Northern Trust. The WGC Cadillac Open, T17. T18 at the Rolls Sport Championship. But you would say, hey, those are top 20 finishes. Well, one missed cut. What's wrong? I mean, there's a lot of players that do that. Now, but we're talking about the top player in the world who before that had eight straight top five finishes. Eight. Before that, okay? So, I mean, something's got to be happening to him. And I'm going to tell you what I think it is, okay? Let me tell you that in the past 16 weeks where he has been. November 5 to the 8th, he was in Shanghai playing the WGC HSBC Champions. Finished T7. Then about 2 weeks afterwards, he was he had to fly 4,894 miles to go to Sydney, Australia, for the Emirates Australian Open. Add to that, the next week he flew 9,474 miles to Albany, the Bahamas, for the Hero World Challenge. Okay, from there he went back home. That's 1,288 miles. Then, 3 weeks after that, he had to fly 3,727 miles to the Hyundai Tournament of Champions in Kapalua. Tack to that, 3,700 miles back to Dallas, to his home. 2 weeks after that, he flew 8,064 miles to Abu Dhabi to play in the HSBC Champions. He finished T5. He had won the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. The week after that, he went immediately from Abu Dhabi to Singapore. That's 3,654 miles. From there, he went back home to Dallas, 9,716 miles. The week after that, 1,600 more miles to go to Pebble Beach. Add the tag those 1,600 back to Dallas, then you have 1,000 more to go to the Northern Trust Open in Scottsdale, 1,000 back to Dallas, 1,300 back to Miami, then just a short drive of 280 to Valspar in Tampa, Florida, and then he had to fly to New York on Monday. That's 1,131 miles. He has flown 52,741 miles in 16 weeks. You know how much is the circumference of the Earth? It's 24,901 miles. That's almost twice going around the world in 16 weeks. Add to that the jet lag, and that's at least the miles that he's been. There's no single body that can handle all that. Okay, he's the number one. I understand there's a lot of pressure on maintaining the world's number one status, but hey, oh man, this guy's got to be tired. I mean, there's no way, and there's no rest until after the Ryder Cup on the horizon. He's going to keep going those miles. I mean, Fred, he has to take your word on it. I mean, you have to be the one setting his schedule. I mean, whoever is setting that schedule is killing him. Hey, Jordan, we're 15 minutes away. You're home from mine. I can clear talk to you as well. Let me know, okay? Take it away, because I can't believe how many miles this guy has flown.
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem. I don't know if you happen to see it or not, but Sunday, when he finished up playing with McCoy, when they shook hands on the 18th green, they had a great camera angle, Spieth walking right to the camera. And, you know, they're basically the same age, you know, McCoy and Spieth, okay? And you could see Spieth's face. His face was saggy. It was puffed out. It was like, and you could just see the relief on his face that he was done for the day, okay? This has become a real job for him. And, I mean, that's what it is. It's professional golf. It is a job. But when he was coming up in 2014 and 2015, he was having fun, okay? This was a gas. It was all new. Now he's working. He's earning his money right now, okay? This is where it starts. You know, and it's affecting his temperament also. We saw last week when he struggled a little bit, he said, "We had a tough week." He never does that. If he has if he makes a mistake, if he's playing badly, it's always, "I did this." He always accepts the blame himself. But he included, Mike, the caddy, in that when he said, "We had a tough week." So then, to top it all off, on Sunday, he's beaten by an amateur by 4 shots. You know, you rattled off the last 5 events, what he's been doing. And, no, it's not that bad. You know, he's top 25. And, as long as you're top 25 and on the PGA Tour, you're having a good year. But not what you expect from the number one player in the world. He seems to be losing concentration, struggling early in tournaments. You know, he's getting back into contention after he struggles, but then he struggles again on Sunday. As you mentioned, it's just all that globetrotting, China, Australia, the Bahamas, Hawaii, Abu Dhabi. It's just too much. Somebody's got to tell him, just say no. He could use a couple weeks off, Carlos, but there is precious little time for rest between now and the Ryder Cup in September. He's skipping Orange Tournament this week. But what'd he do? He jumps in a plane and goes to New York and does some TV interviews with Lexi Thompson for Drive, Chip, and Putt. So, anyhow, he's skipping this week. You know, even Jason Day weighed in on the subject. And he said, "I'm worried about him because I don't know if he's playing too much and he's doing too many things with golf and sponsor obligations that he might make. He may get burned out and go through a rut where he doesn't want to be on the golf course for a while." Everyone goes through that. I can understand that. Day can speak from experience. He won 5 times last year, including his first major at the PGA Championship. Had a lot of people pulling at him, wanting him to do this, that, and the other thing. But he had kind of an out with his wife giving birth to their second child. He was able to take a few weeks off, actually 3 months, and kind of just stay home and chill out. He hasn't quite returned to form that we saw last year, but he'll come around. We're pretty sure that he will. You know, it just doesn't seem like much, but with the year that he had last year and the demands on his time now for Spieth, his manager's just going to have to put the brakes on and say, "Hey, man, we got to schedule some downtime in here." Can he power through? Like I said, he's going to have to, because the schedule between now and the fall, a lot of big tournaments in there. You know, you're starting with the Masters, then you've got the Players the next month, then you go right to the U.S. Open, then you're, you know, the Open Championship, and now you're at the PGA, and then you got the playoffs. There's just not a lot of downtime. He can get a couple weeks off, maybe after the Masters in there, he's got tournaments in Texas coming up. He's got the Memorial. There's just not a lot of time to take a break. So hopefully he uses this as a learning opportunity. And, you know, every top golfer has to realize their limits and the need for time away from the course. The constant grind of travel and being in contention every week is physically draining. Also with that, the big bullseye on his back as being world number one, everyone's trying to get a piece of his time. So, Carlos, it's just, you know, he just packed too much stuff in there. You know, and he played a lot of tournaments in 2014 and 2015, and then he continued on that great run through the fall and over the winter, and it's just too much.
It's just too much, and he played 100 tournaments in his career, but the last 3 years, he won 27, 30, and 27. He has played already seven this year, and in those 16 weeks that I was talking about, he has played in 10. 6 weeks he wasn't playing, but consider that he didn't play three from the Hero World Challenge to the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. So, like you mentioned, I mean, he has to do something. Otherwise, I'm worried about what Jason Day said. He's going to be so burned out. He's going to have to get his time off the hard way. Hopefully, it doesn't come to that. Well, any other final comments regarding this before we move on to our final thoughts?
I do not, Carlos. I think that pretty well covered it. Spieth is a grinder, and you know, when you're a grinder, it takes a real toll on you mentally anyhow. And you know, he just doesn't have that fine mental edge right now to turn those 74s into 70s or 71s, and that's his strength. So until he can get his mind right, that's what we're going to see. And you know, we want him to do well in the Masters and in the majors. We want to see that.
We definitely do, and we want to see him back on the winning track. Let's take our final short break. When we come back, we have the final thoughts.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our final thoughts. I'm going to take the tee shot here. I'm going to start talking about, hey, Mike Organ of the Tennessean was reporting on Tiger Woods' interest in a Tennessee site at Thompson Station that will be developed by his partners from Houston's Blue Jack National Project, Beaconland. But more fun than that was the attire choice for the traditional pointing into oblivion photo that was published. It was so fun. Funny that you saw Tiger there pointing towards somewhere gun. You looked at that jeans, at least for as far as we can tell. And in is the Nike Fresh Off the Slopes look, minus that skull mask that he has been using there when he had his teeth broken there when he was watching his then girlfriend. So I don't know. Maybe he's going to be having now his second golf course design. Apparently, it's going to be in Thompson Station there in Tennessee. So we'll keep you posted on it. Another piece of news: golf's impending return to the Olympics became a little more real last week when the new Olympic golf course in Rio de Janeiro hosted a test event featuring 9 Brazilian golfers. The 5 men and 4 women, none of them were household names, competed in the No Purse 18-hole exhibition after all of the world's top players reportedly passed on the chance, even though the PGA Tour had arranged for a free round-trip charter. For the record, Miriam Nagel, a 35-year-old Brazilian who grew up mostly in Germany and plays on the latest European Tour, was the overall medalist with a 67. Alexander Rocha and Rodrigo Lee ranked 554th and 1731st in the world. Wow, big, big rankings in numbers, respectively, were the low male competitors with 68s. All of them gave raving reviews of the course, but take things from where they come. But to its defense, this is a Gilhan's design, so... Well, we'll have to wait until the Olympics to have the big pros let us know how they feel, but that's just around the corner. That's in August. And speaking of those big pros, hey, if Olympics were today, take into consideration that the Olympic Committee had set the men's and women's fields at 60 players each. For the men's, top 15 are automatically in, with a country having as much as 4 if they're inside the top 15. Otherwise, it's just a maximum of 2. That means that the U.S. in the men, and of course the powerhouse in the ladies, South Korea, are going to be affected by this. Jordan Spieth, Bubba Watson, Ricky Fowler, and Dustin Johnson are in for our five foursome, leaving for the moment Patrick Reed, number 10, and Jim Furyk, number 15, out. But you have to consider also that there's Brooks Koepka, Zach Johnson, and Phil Mickelson, that each with a win could get inside the top 10 easily and knock anybody out. In the women, we talked about this last week, in Bay Park, Hannah Yang, Amy Yang, and Se-young Kim are in, while Ingi Shun, who is 8, So-young, who is 10, and Hyo-yu Kim, who is 12, are out, and don't discount Na-yeon Choi, who's 22 and with a win could jump into the fray. When we take a quick look at the teams, the men, we see that Jason Day and Adam Scott, if he goes there, are going to be fabulous there in the Australia team. Also, you have to say that the Spaniards, even though Sergio Garcia and Rafa Cabrera Bello, Justin Rose and Danny Willett for Great Britain, and also one team that looks awesome is Brad Grace and Louis Oosthuizen for South Africa. So that's going to be one very good team. For the women's, we would have to say the Americans right now is Lexi Thompson, Stacey Lewis, and Christy Kerr. Also, you have to look at maybe Minji Lee and Kerry Webb from Australia as another strong team. And don't forget about the Spaniards who won the international crown. Right now, Sahara Munoz and Carlota Siganda, Fred, are the two in.
Yeah, we're going to keep an eye on those as we go along here this summer, Carlos. I'm sure they'll change a little bit. But, you know, some of the top names are going to be in there. And there's going to be some names that aren't going to be able to make it into the tournament. So, you know, it's kind of a weird deal, but we'll keep an eye on that for you. Hey, Carlos, is Trump Westchester worth $50 million or $1.4 million? In a story from The Guardian by John Swain, who was looking at various Donald Trump lawsuits related to Trump National Golf Club in Westchester, he found that Trump is suing the city of Ossining. They're saying that he needs to, the property needs to be valued at around $50 million for taxes, and he's saying, oh my goodness, no, it's only worth $1.4 million, even though he bought it for about $8 million in foreclosure in the mid-90s, and he supposedly put $50 million into it. You know, I think Donald's a little bit off on this one. You know, he's fighting it through court anyhow, you know. He's going to be president, so you know what? He's, you know, he needs to, you know, he's got to throw his weight around a little bit. Something else here, we got another thing that's kind of funny. Wentworth, you know, we've been following the situation there at Wentworth with the members' fight against the new owners of the Wentworth Club in London. Jeremy Paxson wrote in the Financial Times, he said, you know, this maybe is just part of a broader issue. You know, it's maybe the death of the country club membership. You know, to give you some background, the new owner there at Wentworth wants to make it a really exclusive club. He's raised the fees up to like $100,000. You know, all the old members that were members, you know, he's kicking those guys out basically because they don't, you know, he wants them to pay more money, and they're all, you know, saying, well, I've been there forever and, you know, sitting around in the clubhouse, you know, collecting dust. So anyhow, this guy says that, you know what, people have been a member of a club so long, they feel like they're part of the furniture there. And you know what, things change, you know, the times change. Country clubs, I think that's part of the problem of country clubs here in the United States. They all want to protect their little turf. They want to go in there, and it's their own little thing. That's the way it's been. But you know what? They're not attracting the younger members, and they don't want it like that. They want a little different deal. They want it a little more go-go, a little more active. So you know what? Anyhow, the Wentworth thing, that's kind of funny, and it's kind of an in-depth article. Also, then, I found this this week that Adam Scott's win at Doral and ascension back among the elite of the PGA Tour prompted Dottie Pepper to write a great short article on ESPNW about the resiliency factor in golf. She talks about how she went from the number one in the world to missing cuts, hitting bottom, and not having any fun on the golf course. She had to change clubs and coaches and get back to work. Because golf, more than any other sport, is such an individualistic endeavor, and the athlete is confronted with many more defeats than victories, it's up to each golfer to find the desire to continue to fight and work to improve to once again regain form. The resiliency factor is definitely one of the most important character traits that is needed to play well the game and enjoy it. You see that in all the top golfers, Carlos. We haven't seen, Adam Scott was the number one golfer in what, 2008 or 2009 or something like that. Here we are 8 years later, and he's been out there working, and now they've taken his long putter when he had to learn a new putting technique. And, it's just he's had to stay in shape, but still not getting the results. So it's just, golf is a very demanding game. You can't look at it from 1 minute to the next. You have to look over the course of years, over the course of careers. It's just like we're seeing with Jordan Spieth. We talked about it today. You know what? He's a young guy. We've only seen him hot on the scene here for 2 years. Let's look at it again in 10 years and see what's happened. What do you think?
Oh, my God. It was a great, great article, and she was right on. I mean, you have to think about what could happen right now to Tiger Woods. He's going through the same thing because of the injury and all that, and he doesn't seem to be having fun going out there on the course anymore, but apparently he's getting back. So we'll see. Maybe it'll apply the resiliency factor to Tiger Woods. Well, Back Niners, this will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, PGA Junior Golf Player Development Manager, South Florida section of the PGA, Ty Wolford. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, or if you miss it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. And if you haven't done so, hey, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.